Welcome back, listeners, to the Devocrit podcast. My name is Melissa. Myself and a few of my colleagues had the amazing opportunity to go and see the installation exhibition called Shallow Sleep by artist Stephen Hobbs at his Mabuning studio. And we were also treated to a fantastic walkabout by the artist. Stephen's exhibition that is called A Short Life with Bangolo Bliss is the sister show to Shallow Sleep, and it's currently on show at the Blue House in Parkwood. I wanted to ask Stephen to tell us a little bit about how these two exhibitions in two different locations connect with each other.
The body of work that I've produced between David Crook Projects, the Blue House, and my studio in Maboneng go under the titles of A Short Life with Bangolo Bliss and Shallow Sleep, respectively. What's important to me about these exhibitions is that after years of exhibiting at David Crook Projects, and the galleries tend to be quite small, and therefore it's difficult to express certain ideas that you might have that are about narrative or installation. So the way I conceived of the two exhibitions, the one at the Blue House takes place inside a former house. Before it was Hardidar, the commercial business there, it was actually a house built in Parkwood. So the exhibition takes advantage of three main rooms within the main part of the house. So there's an entrance hall, if you will, main room, and then we move into a room that runs perpendicular to that, the back, and then we loop back to a side room. And that was useful from the point of view that one could set up line of sight between the monotypes and between the boxes, the box works, in such a way that you could navigate the space in a very simple way, and then have a kind of surprise when you loop around to the side room that does connect to the main entrance, where situated in that room is work that predates my move to Ireland and essentially is all a selection of my printmaking work from the David Crook workshop. So there's the kind of old and the new. And the new is really new, right? Because the new is made on cardboard boxes, which typically most wouldn't consider to be an appropriate substrate to make art on. And I'm working with different types of tape. Some of it is low light reflective tape, and some of it is quite conventional duct tape, but in very garish colors. And the monotypes as well are informed by color, the use of color, and in some ways exaggerated color. Now, from an intentional point of view, I was surrounded by green most of the time I was living in Ireland, because we were living rurally and we were surrounded by dairy farmlands and cows and things like that. Equally, however, when you are locked in, and our lockdowns in Ireland were, I think they were the longest in Europe. You lock down in a home that is supposed to represent, from a rental point of view, the home you might stay in to get you settled for a year or two or 3 years, get established, and then find a property over time. So the spatial relationship between the Blue House and some reflection on the size of the rooms and the way that we lived in Ireland was a perfect fit. The decision to make an installation in Maboneng was in response to the fact that I'm a little bit tired of the spaces I know. I've exhibited in that space many times. So the opportunity to take work out of a box and put it into a series of boxes in the Blue House was very useful. And then a way of trying to unify the rooms in the Blue House exhibition was to introduce two tables. So the tables were an opportunity to reflect, to respond on a sort of horizontal surface to the quality of the box works in tape and so forth, but it was also to introduce a domestic object, such as a table. Now, what is reflected on in my installation here in Maboneng, where we're sitting at the moment, and I've turned the sound off, but I made a video where I attached a GoPro camera on a little robot vacuum cleaner. And what's quite funny about these vacuum cleaners is, even though they have sensors on them to help them kind of make their way out of tight spaces, they can get really stuck. And then they go full-blown robotic mode, and they just keep bouncing and banging. And the behavior of that robot is kind of no different to the way I think we all felt at the height of the lockdowns, where we were bouncing off the walls. What's particular, to make the connection back to the table, is the fact that the kitchen table in our bungalow in Ireland was very comforting about it. We were in close proximity to the children all the time. People could sit at the kitchen table while I cooked, or at the fireplace. So there was this real sense of kind of like a contained, and in winter that's very cozy and lovely. So, but equally, during the height of the lockdowns, we also saw the worst sides of ourselves. And conversations that took place that maybe would normally not have happened in the company of our children happened. Fights took place around those tables, but reconciliation also did. Our children expressed themselves around meals, morning, noon, and night. So there's something that was very particular about that kitchen table representing the heart of an emotional struggle to find place in a situation none of us could have predicted, that we could not have predicted the kind of emotions we'd all be experiencing on a global and on an intimate, private, domestic level. So the table represents a lot. Of course, the tables in the Blue House don't look like kitchen tables, but that doesn't matter. In the context of the show here in Maboneng, the video shows this vacuum cleaner robot getting caught inside the kitchen table and bouncing off of the chairs, which for me served, and it was one of the last videos I made before I left, and it served as a perfect portrait of a kind of psychodrama that all of us experienced in one shape or form. The other thing about the Maboneng studio, which belongs to the Trinity Session, so Marcus and I own this space with a partner, was typically divided in half. So Marcus had equal space on one side and I the other. Now we're sitting in an environment that's about 200 square meters, and the installation itself is probably about 120 squares itself, with high walls and then an exposed trussed ceiling. So there's huge volume here right now. And one of the things that helped me with the transition back to South Africa, and I was talking to my team at the time, maybe I need to do it in Maboneng, not only because the galleries are small in Rosebank, but because Marcus isn't using the space anymore. So maybe I have the luxury of rethinking and reshaping the space to do something really expressive. In the Blue House, the narrative is pretty straightforward. If we moved 6 times, and we sold everything, and that went into boxes, and the remaining household belongings went into a small box on the sea, and then we unpacked boxes when we got there, and then we put more things in boxes when we returned, and we did this 6 times, essentially, over 19 months, 20 months. But of course, I only had cardboard at my disposal in 2020, and those were boxes that were coming in from Amazon orders. And it became logical to work with what you had at your disposal. So the boxes, when you flatten out a box that is used to package a printer or perfume or whatever, it's not your standard box that you imagine. It has a particular die that cuts a form and then it's folded. And those things, the architectural brain in me instantly started making connections between the boxes folded out as floor plans and then the floor plan of the bungalow we were living in, which had a very particular kind of quaintness and sense of containment, as well as a whole set of kind of cultural rituals that you would observe if you were Irish. In other words, on a regular day, you would really be spending all of your time around the living room and the fireplace in the kitchen, and life would take place between the bedrooms and the kitchen and the fireplace there, and you would only go to the dining room and or the main living room on Sundays. So we already broke with tradition by using the lounge every night because that's what we were accustomed to in Joburg. Now, these are very mundane things I'm talking about. But when you are in a situation where you spend a lot of time having a ritualized relationship to, so you wake, I wake up every morning and I do yoga. Then I make breakfast for everybody usually. And then I go into I go into my place of work. And then I make work later in the day. Now in Ireland, then you're thinking about, you've got to recycle your own trash. You've got to go to the coal thing to get coal for the fire in the afternoon. Then where's the wood coming from? So there's constantly activity. You're constantly inside and outside the house because of the weather, which is very unpredictable. So domestic life is very quickly ritualized in very simple ways, also because you're living rurally. So there are no typical modern distractions. You don't quickly nip off to the mall. You kind of stay within the greenness of that environment. The installation here in the studio in Maboneng is what I might refer to as a very crude sentence structure made up of language that is sourced from an archive of multiple reference points. You have to remember that the Irish were invaded by the Celts, by the Vikings, by the Saxons, Anglo-Saxons, Normans, and finally the British exercised serious force from 1600s onwards. So Ireland has traces of fortification and serious defensiveness, which was an accumulated sort of defensive architecture over time, which the British really kind of perfected. And so parts of the installation here in Maboneng make reference to militaristic language and to camouflage and to kind of hide-and-seek feel. There are paintings that, you know, it's a kind of all-over painting. There are paintings on the floor. There are things that, in theory, should make a first-time visitor kind of mindful of the fact that they're stepping on something. And is it benevolent or is it benign or is it malignant? That sense of where you step. So there's an idea of mapping space, gridding the body within space. And then the installation is lit in a somewhat theatrical way with a lot of video projection. Now the video projections, so the theatricality of the lighting is for mood, of course, but also amplification of ideas. So in the representation of the wood view, our house, our bungalow in Ireland was called Wood View because it looked out onto the woods, which were removed by the mid-late 90s to make way for housing estates. But my representation of the wood view is here, but it's represented through pixelated trees that make reference to pixelated graphics of trees that sat in the orientational maps in our village. I looked at these orientational maps that showed you footpaths and so on, and for whatever reasons, the graphic designers chose to represent the trees as tiny little pixel trees, which is completely antithetical, visually and aesthetically, to the natural environment, which is made up of organic kind of camouflage and trees. The videos in the installation are part sketches. The one with the video camera on the robotic vacuum cleaner, of course, the vacuum cleaner getting caught in the kitchen table legs is about claustrophobia and lockdown rules. But other videos, the video to the left of me here, which is the back of my son. So we're in Garrettstown, in close to Kinsale, on a very long strand, a long beach near to the Kinsale Heads. It was winter, we just arrived, and my son decided to roll up his pants and walk along the water's edge as the water was coming in. And he literally walked along the sort of white water edge of the water coming in. For me, it's quite a melancholic image because he's just following the line of the water and he's drifting out into the landscape. And he's an introspective child and a quiet child a lot of the time. So I videoed him quietly, just tracking him from behind, trying to wonder, what is he thinking? He's in a new place. He's never lived near the sea. What's going through his mind right now? And I found it to be a very melancholic image, a melancholic portrait. His body language, the way he's walking, a projection of fear or of loneliness onto him, of confusion. There was a premonition built into that, that maybe we were never meant to be there in the first place. Now that's hyper over projection. But I always felt that sadness. I felt the sadness in filming him. I felt the sadness in the resulting image. But that sadness is also heightened by the poetic of the video. And it's on a constant loop in the installation. Some of the other videos in here are intentionally playful. So there's one video where in the top level of the back of our bungalow, there was a green area which we asked our landlord we could put up grow tunnels in there. I leveled all of the grass with a hedge cutter. So it's not a lawnmower, right? It's a handheld, it's a bit like holding a chainsaw in your hands. And I leveled the ground, and then I brought Bronwyn's kinesiology massage table up onto that grass, and then I took the subframe of the grow tunnel, and I made the subframe move across the bed as if it was a bed in a CT scanner. Now, I have had a lot of CT scans, for my own medical reasons, and I was just playing with the materials at hand. So I made like a low-tech reference to getting a CAT scan, if you will. There's another video here where our landlord's eldest son is in the middle of a shootout with water guns with my child Robin, and I have built into the gravel pitch in the back of the house a series of OSB board obstacles, which in military terms you would make out of concrete, and you'd put them on landing beaches to prevent landing craft and anything else. And coming onto the beach would be like a conventional obstacle. And people use them as bollards as well today in a contemporary way. So there's sketches of things that were part of a constant making process in Ireland that in the context of the studio make it possible for me to show, because I can have three projections running with big distances between them and respect the projection ratio that I want, which is like 3 meters by 2 meters. I can't do that in the small galleries in Rosebank. So the shows, they are in some ways polar opposites of one another, because in the context of a commercially driven show, the box works are really beautifully framed. They sit beautifully on the wall. They're in conversation with each other, the linocuts, the monotypes and so forth, these tables on the floor, and it's pretty succinct. It's pretty straightforward. It's abstract, of course. They're a series of maps made with tape and things. Very abstracted maps is what the boxworks represent to me. But they are mapping. Mapping of experience, spatialized fear, tactics of deception. And in the studio in Maboneng, the floor is substantially painted, as are parts of the walls, with similar devices. And I have used tape in the installation as well. The combination of found objects I've brought back from Ireland, my fork, my rake, and my spade. I've got workbenches from Ireland. I've got bits and pieces that I accumulated and so forth. And those things are, you could say, reliquaries on the one hand. They're also static actors within the installation. And the centerpiece of the installation is an architect's board, drawing board, with a whole bunch of notes on it. And one of the things that I had to do very urgently when we settled in our bungalow was to get an office set up. So I used the dining room in the bungalow as the office. So I got permission to build boards, because we weren't allowed to hang anything on the walls. So I built boards and I leaned them against the walls and just created a wall room, basically. So I'd go in there and roughly work 6 hours a day on Trinity session work and Zoom. And then usually towards the end of the day, I'd open the door out onto the kitchen and I'd like talk to everybody and say things are going to start happening, and then I'd start making work, and then I'd go and make dinner and all of this. So the drawing table and all the notes on it and so forth is a nod to that space that very quickly became very, very layered with material and research and printouts and books that I was buying. And then I came across this book, Bungalow Bliss. Because prior to the move-in and everything, I wasn't aware of this housing revolution in Ireland. And then things became much more focused and particular and specific. That there was this publication that was conceived by an architect in 1970 or whatever, with 6 approved housing schemes that could help rural Irish people fast-track their living conditions from sort of old farmhouse and sort of stone cottage type stuff into modern housing. Now, if you want to critique the revolution from an aesthetic point of view, it's a disaster in the landscape, because you just have lots of these little boxes popping up all over the place and they don't integrate well with the landscape. There's also a very conservative heritage act, if you will. Essentially, if you build anything new in a rural landscape, it pretty much has to look like a barn. It's quite interesting that it shouldn't deviate from a classic barn-like form. So the idea of radicalizing architecture from a radical heritage point of view is deeply frowned upon, and you really can't get away with it. It's also very difficult to buy homes. Homes are typically passed down from generation to generation, so to buy a new Irish property in the rural areas, which is a dream, is hard. So this Bungalow Bliss book, which I found in its 13th print edition form, you know, Ireland's bestseller circa 1998, I think, with now 260 plans that you could buy for a price and that were already approved by council, seemed like an ironic representation of an unattainable dream. Ironic representationally because of the illustration and the kind of, dare I say, naive representation of living. And it goes one step further, because there's a lot of sections in the book that talk about how to mow the lawn and how to plant your garden. In other words, these are skills that rural Irish people had no idea about, because they weren't ever concerned with the aesthetics of their environment per se. They were really living often hand to mouth. The post-famine era has left a huge psychic imprint on the Irish from a farming point of view and an agricultural point of view. There's a lot of complexity around land ownership or acquiring it. And for the Irish, it means everything. And for newcomers like South Africa, the whole dream of having a rural, idyllic rural existence kind of lasted for about 3 months, and then it turned into a nightmare. How do you come back to a place that was your full-blown artistic, cultural, and historical identity? How do you come back to a place that you had to do so much work on yourself to leave, in order to then come back deeply wounded and let go and smash all of those dreams of a different future? So I think that what we're sitting in today, the studio installation and the show in the gallery, are obviously the result of serious emotional processing of psychic pain, of the role of a father in all of that and of a husband, and then each of the family members' individual dramas that played out and that can speak from their own experience of deep pain and confusion, and to then try and make sense of Johannesburg and South Africa in the state that it's in today, where in many respects Ireland and that part of the world maybe offered a safer future, certainly. And I'm not so sure that we did the right or the wrong thing. We're here, South Africa's home, Johannesburg is home. I'm in some ways more rooted and connected here than I certainly would ever have been if we settled in Ireland or even in the United Kingdom where I grew up. So this is a project about home. Thanks.
Thank you, listeners, for joining us on this episode of the David Crit Podcast. For more information about Stephen Harbers and his two exhibitions, or to receive a catalogue of the artworks, please email info.jhb@davidcrit.com or send us a message via our Instagram page. You can also find related links in the description of this podcast.